happen. Okay, so what we said while you couldn't hear us is, I'm Randall Schwartz, and this is...
Daniel Baker.
Yes, and we're here to be the entire panel for this presentation, and as I suspected, neither of us actually prepared any sort of presentation, so I have some notes, though. I've been taking notes for the last 3 hours, and... you know, getting everything ready. I mean, there's a lot of other things I'm doing here, too. Hopefully some of you will show up for Hacker 101 at 7 o'clock, because I'll be here, again, providing color commentary for the actual hackers on the panel. Hopefully you've enjoyed the conference so far. And should we start with the conversation?
Certainly.
Oh, well, introduce yourself, kind of, besides just your name.
Y'all all know who Randall is, I should hope. My name is Daniel Baker. I just have a long and colored history, generally with relation to Usenet. I've presented here for several years now, and particularly on Usenet, and also with copyright issues, which I shan't be talking about today, hopefully. Today we'll be talking about network neutrality and some of the hot keywords here.
Well, first off, just probably the most recent news, I don't know how many people caught the news this morning, but Comcast has decided that they would cut you off after 250 gigabytes in 1 month.
So they will. They would reveal that.
No,
they would reveal that. They were doing that already.
Okay. Well, but now it's policy. Now it's part of the AUP. So from what I understand and looking at the news stories this morning, they will give you one warning phone call. And to what number, I'm not sure, because I don't even know if they have my number from years ago, and what number that would be. And then they'll cut you off. I think it says interrupt your service for up to 6 months, which would be really sucky, I think. So I don't know if that means you have to pay for those 6 months. That would be weird. Anyway, so that's probably the biggest news in this area. And we'll talk a little bit about, what is 250 gigabytes? How far?
250 gigabytes. Yeah. I'm sorry?
Yeah, it's a 749 kilobits, and that would mean if you're watching like not a full HD stream, but like a a good like streaming video, but you have to watch it 24/7 to get that.
Yeah. So, but if you have a lot of downloads going on in the background, you could actually work through that. How many DVDs are we talking there? What's that? 80 DVDs?
From what I could see, again in the news stories I've got, it's not clear, but it looks like that actually only counts download. So upload is a separate.
Upstream is generally asymmetric. Upstream, your maximum possible bandwidth is generally much lower.
Yeah, so they're probably not so worried about the upstream. They're not counting that as part of the 250. Is what I saw again in the news reports, and it might be something that might come out differently later. Now, the other odd thing I saw about this is that they're not providing any sort of tool to measure it for you. In other words, there's no website you can go to say, what's my current usage this month? They expect you to install your own software on your own single computer that you're using this with to monitor this. And I know that personally, I've got this wonderful little Airport Extreme set up in one corner of my house, and my brother and I both share the bandwidth, and I know he does a lot of streaming music videos, so we're going to have to cut that out. So I don't know how I'm going to measure that, because my router doesn't have any clue about this.
Yeah, that's one of the problems here is that without the tools, if they're going to go with the cap model, then it seems sensible to allow the end users to be able to actually monitor what they use. And for other systems, such in the industry that I work in, when we put quotas and caps on Usenet downloads, that's what you're buying. You know what you're getting. You have the tools to monitor this. You know how much you've done and know if you're about to go over, and you can re-up. I don't know that there's any sort of option. If you go over this 250 gigs, all your option is to sit out of the pool for up to 6 months. So that's
And if Comcast is the only provider in your area that provides broadband, you're really up a creek. I happen to be in Fios area, so this may be my final time to switch. So
might be a good time.
Yeah, might be. Question?
When I signed up for Comcast, basically the contract was saying that I've got unlimited bandwidth. Are they going back and retroactively changing the contract?
They're probably giving the option to cancel today.
Actually, if you also read the rest of the contract, it also probably says we can change it anytime.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's one of those slimy contracts. Yeah, so I also want to compare this to, I have Sprint EVDO, and I'm using it up here to be online, and I had Verizon before that, and I went above the 5 gigabyte unmentioned level on 1 month, just downloading podcasts while I was on the road for 2 weeks. And although that's not in the list of Verizon's approved activities, just the idea that I would go past 5 gigabytes, they gave me like a week warning before they'd cut me off. there was not even an option of continuing on after some sort of first warning. So I walked across the street and got Sprint instead. And Sprint has been, at this point, unlimited up until next month. Now they're actually going to a 5 gigabyte cap as well. So that's going to suck because, again, I mean, if I'm on the road for 2 weeks, I've got this. And also the thing is, a lot of times I'm, and I have a lot of home weeks as well. I'm about half time on the road. And a lot of times I'm at Wi-Fi areas. So I'll go for maybe 3 weeks or a month without touching the card at all. And then if they're going to cut me off for 5 gigabytes the next month just because of the month boundaries, it's going to be a little tricky because I'm not really committing that much to their overall network. Yeah.
What's the philosophy behind capping downloads? Why do it? Why limit people?
Because they oversell the capacity. They presume that not everybody is going to use all the capacity that they're selling you. So there has to be an upper limit to each person so that they don't hit that upper limit. Because otherwise, you'd use up too much of the capacity. There's not that much to cover it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody's going to be sitting out. And they assume that a lot of people are going to be just using it to surf the web in a low amount, read their email. But large media is so accessible these days and only becoming more so, whether you're looking at YouTube videos or downloading shows or watching the Olympics. I think that's a fine example here is something that, is very much, accessible to the general public, desirable for them. And you could go on there and there were 3,600 hours of Olympics broadcast by NBC online. So you could have downloaded this and you could have watched this. And that would have gone probably fairly substantially. I don't know at what rate they were allowing, put that through there. But that would have substantially cut into this. And if more people are doing this, if everybody on your block says, I really don't want to watch this on TV or it's poor timing, so you could watch it online instead, that's more convenient, then that starts to eat towards the maximum that the pipe that they've got coming to your neighborhood, coming to your city can deal with. And so they impose these caps in order to not have to upgrade everything or change around their whole business model, wherein they're selling you up to a certain download speed and now with a quota, but they aren't going to guarantee that, and they aren't going to tell you that, well, maybe you're going to just get 56K when your neighbors all are doing the exact same thing that you are, at high bandwidth.
But that's such an interesting point, though, is that what they're doing is they're selling it as one thing, and this is where the ethics of this come in. What they're doing is selling one thing, which is called unlimited, when in fact there's no way they could absolutely give everybody unlimited access. That's not going to work. There's just not enough capacity at the next switch, away from you. There's not that kind of capacity there, and there never will be. You're always going to do a network planning on the basis that not everybody is going to download every single bit every day. And then so maybe one of the outcomes of this decision then by having Comcast reveal that there actually is an upper limit is that they're actually saying, let's be reasonable then about what we're selling you. We are selling you 250 gigabytes. We'll guarantee that. We'll guarantee you access 250 gig, but after that, you're not our customer.
And the other thing to think about here is to contrast this model, the consumer broadband, versus guaranteed broadband, such as where I have been living. I don't have access to broadband. I have a T1 to my home. That is in the, depending on who you get it from and if it's a full and all that, I'm getting 1 megabit per second up and down. I have a high quality of service. I have a very low latency, but we're talking 300 and up per month for this easily. That fortunately, a company that puts the bill for me. I work from home, so but just compare that to what you can pay for consumer broadband, and you get these atrocious things that make my T1 seem like it's slow as molasses. But you aren't really guaranteed that. If my line goes down, versus your line goes down, there are other quality of service issues. But the main thing is I'm paying more for the actual bandwidth. I'm paying for guaranteed bandwidth. If that started to be cut into, that would be a problem.
And this is really, when you look at it, this really what happens in this last mile connection. And let's say that Comcast bought a T1. They buy much bigger stuff, but let's just use your example and your dollars there. They're buying a T1 out to a home neighborhood. So they're guaranteed 1 megabit there, and they're paying somebody $300 a month for that. They resell that service to 10 homes at $50 a piece. They're taking 500 in, they're paying 300 out. Now, if one person is online and uses up the full megabit, he gets it. If two people start using it, it's down to half a megabit. But if everybody kept trying to pull the full megabit out of there, it wouldn't work. But they'll probably sell it as a megabit line simply because if you're the only one doing it right then, you've got access
to that.
That's
right, up to 1 megabit per second.
So it's the same thing that's happening. So they're really, the thing is, they're lifting the curtain a bit now. The smoke is clearing and what actually happens in this thing. They buy guaranteed bandwidth only down to the neighborhood, and then they have to figure out a profit model that works from there down. So you really are sharing bandwidth from the first hop upward.
I think we have a question right there.
From what you guys have been saying, I kind of understand how they do the, in terms of bandwidth, how they do the sharing, but how does that apply to transfer? Do they have a certain budget of transfer that they allocate per neighborhood per se?
Well, you can only send so many bits from one level up, and the only way to figure out who's borrowing more of this 1 megabit is to have a total cap. Because that would then aggregate the total bits put through there. For a total amount of bandwidth that they're selling in a neighborhood, they can build out capacity that would probably, they're going to juggle a bit. They're going to say, yes, we're offering 250 gigabytes to everybody here, but we bet, based on our average, that most people won't use more than 30 gigabytes in a month.
So they'll build
the guaranteed next layer based on 30 gigabytes a month, but they have to be able to shut the people out there to using up more than their share of that. That's the only way the model would work. And it's right. So what's happening now, though, is they're saying this is you know, I would much rather have them do this out front and say this is it, 250 gigabytes, and this just beyond that you're using so much that it just completely throws our pictures out. I'd rather have that be obvious and explicit than to have it be something that just magically happens when you get to a certain level.
Yeah, and the other thing is so that because of this model, because of it, they have limited bandwidth for that last into the neighborhood. They can't. I guess they really can't even offer you a option of buying more, so that you could drop $5 or more likely, $10 to get another 50 gigabytes, added on to your quota there. Instead, you're stuck because you're an abuser, and the 250 isn't even, it's more of a service.
Well, let's get the word abuse out of this. Yeah. It isn't really so much abuse, it's just
their point of view. Yeah. You're abusing what they have created there. It's more use than they expected.
You are not their typical customer.
Exactly.
That's the thing. We're trying to sell to the typical customer, and you're not a 250 gigabytes a month.
Yeah, you lose profitability.
Their figure is that 99% of their customers are under this limit. It's the 1% at the top that they're going after. Yeah. But that's their figures. I don't have anything to back that up with. Yeah, front row.
This is interesting. In the last mile, I've done a lot of work with it.
Uh-huh.
The way I regard it, net neutrality has more to do with more towards the backbone.
Yeah, we're just covering this first topic because it was hot news. I've got that on the list of things to cover.
Whenever somebody asks a question and then
repeat the answer. He was talking about there's other issues around net neutrality besides this. Net neutrality actually talks more about last mile content providers, things like that. We'll get to that. It's on my list. Yeah.
So people have pretty much proven that Comcast has a lot of packaging and filtering over the last couple of years, like from the very beginning of the network traffic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the question was, are they going to be doing packet filtering and stuff now that this decision has come out? It's my understanding that this was part of the agreement that they had to do, they were slapped for torrent limiting and packet shaping, and that this is part of the agreement that came out of that. They now have to have some other way of dealing with the upper bounds on people like this. Yeah, I believe that's my understanding so far. Yeah. Yeah, question.
I don't think they were actually, they didn't incur any kind of negative anything. Basically, they were just told to stop. They weren't fined, they weren't penalized, they didn't lose any kind of privileges.
Right.
They were just told, don't do it anymore, They've been doing it this whole time, and it's widely regarded as fraud by a lot of people, I think. Am I the only person, maybe it's because I work in a lab, but when you tell me I get an amount of data and a rate and a time, to me that's the same as having a cap, I don't know, whatever you said it was, 750...
Oh, well, you mean if you were to buy a 7 megabit down, 512 up connection, then you're viewing that as having a cap as using the entire thing for 24/7 at 7
right.
megabits per second.
That's what I'd much rather be told your connection is only 50 megabits or, some lower number, and then occasionally it goes faster.
Yeah. That's why there's that really tiny four letters up above the up to, and then 7 megabits per second, 512,
that's just marketing. mean?
Yeah, exactly. And that's where that is. And that's the difference that I was trying to make between to show between consumer brand broadband and then paying for guaranteed broadband, where I really could sit there and, you know, peg my T1 and be irate if, hey, I'm not getting my full 1 megabit here. You know, I paid for this.
Because you have a dedicated line to a much bigger pipe.
Exactly. So I have a dedicated pipe. It's a smaller pipe than what the whole neighborhood would have gotten, but I have it all to myself.
And part of this is understanding that the typical consumer profile would want a fast burst rate, which is what they're advertising. And then, but their overall consumption shouldn't exceed some number. So that's why the new numbers are coming in.
For now. Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, the way movies are being distributed is changing. The way people talk to other people, like Skype is a distributed protocol. It's all... You know, in 10 years, everybody might use Skype to talk internationally.
Yeah, and I'm guessing this 250 gigabyte cap is going to have to move because of market pressure.
Yeah.
So it might make sense today. It might not make sense even a year from now. But Comcast is going to have to move. If Verizon comes along in their Fios areas and says, well, we'll deliver, you know, 500 gigabyte for the same price, you know Comcast is going to have to meet that back and forth.
Yeah, though they may have to. It may take them some time. Yeah. This may be more of a stalling technique where they're going to come in and then they're going to have to roll out something in these other neighborhoods. But I think we have a question back in the back on the row here. Niall?
I was going to say that doesn't necessarily follow because when Comcast institutes a policy that they're going to do X, then that kind of reduces pressure to perform on, for example, Verizon. So maybe they won't decide to offer the next layer or the next speed step on their files.
Yeah, it's a tough call. I mean, it's a marketing thing, and it's really just going to depend on, you know, if they've got it there, and then they could come in there and trump Comcast and other cable operators and say, look, we're so much better, then they're going to really reap the rewards there, and Comcast is going to be sitting there like, well, we couldn't do anything about this if we wanted to, and until we lose enough people to Fios or, you know, other options. Now, hey, look, suddenly we've got some breathing room, 300 instead of 250.
Now, just so we don't spend the whole time on caps, let's talk a little bit about that last mile conflict issue.
Yeah, sure.
So here's Comcast now saying they've got a 250 gigabyte cap, and they say it includes the downloads. Now, I'm downloading stuff to my TiVo through Amazon Unbox. That's obviously going to count into that cap. But let's say then Comcast offers their own movie download service, and they have a special exception for those. So now we've got the last mile last mile content issues. We have both a carrier and a content provider, you know, wearing the same hat, and that's where we're going to get into some issues too. And that's come across in some other areas as well.
Yeah, you had started to touch on that really about how more movies and all of that were available online. Comcast wants to be a part of that. They're used to delivering movies and other content to you. They've got access. They've already got deals with a lot of people. Now they'd like to take that and leverage it to, you know, they're in your house. They want to be your Skype. They want to be your movie provider. They don't care if Amazon Unbox makes it or not. All that is, you know, it allows people to use more of their precious bandwidth.
And they've already said that their voice over IP service doesn't count in this cap either.
Which is kind of ironic to think about because they obviously have physical limits that they're dealing with here, and maybe they've already built that into that 250 to give themselves a hedge room here to leave room for their own services to come through. But here, let's get through.
I think I just irritated about 20 people here. This is great. All right.
So
you pick.
You're right here in the front.
I've got one. Just kind of backtrack a little bit. You say you guaranteed content like a corporate or a T1. Mm-hmm. I have five, 6 MUX T1s running into a building that I work into, a company I work for. And we deal with an ISP that has somehow, I don't know if they outsold their own bandwidth, but we're supposed to have 5 MUX T1s worth of bandwidth, and we've been pulling 2.5.
Mm.
And I called them and raised hell, and they essentially said, well, we can't do it. We can't really say, we put our finger on why, and I said, well,
do it.
We're paying for it.
Yeah.
Pay up, and it's like, well, they essentially told me to sit on it and rotate.
You might want to ask them about, you know, well, what would your partial T1 cost be? Because maybe that's what we should be paying for, because that's what we're getting. And then
basically said we'll have to get back to
and then go and look at somebody.
All of a sudden, 2 weeks later, boom, they're all running full tilt.
Yeah, and then go and look at somebody like Quest or somebody large who may charge you a little bit more, but especially in this, you get what you pay for. So, way in the back.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing really it seems is working for the type of user in this room is that technology is moving forward. And as their average consumer user, the begins to use more of these services, they will be forced by market pressure to increase their hooks.
Well, that's, I think one of the things, the other conflict here that is that not all markets have competition for that last mile. And that's one of the real pinches here is that, you know, we're stuck. A lot of the local areas, such as the community that I live in, the whole county has a deal with Charter and can't even leverage the deal to get cable out to where I live, which is still in the city boundaries, and we're the smallest county in Georgia. But we can't get cable out where I live because we just aren't, you know, we don't make sense for the market. But because of that, you don't have, the market pressure may be there, but it isn't, they don't, there's no real competition. It's not like you're going to leave unless you've got Fios coming in, unless you've got good DSL. So the fellow who had mentioned that, well, you know, is this cap going to actually drive Verizon to offer more bandwidth there or to offer a better deal? Maybe, maybe not, because if there are only two of them in that market, you know, it may really vary market to market.
So. There's precedents for this. That when telephony was first being rolled out across the U.S., the federal government said, yes, you will provide telephone service to everyone.
Yeah,
same
exactly.
Thing with the power grid. There was, I mean, people talk about regulation like it's a bad thing, but, you know, regulation got lights on in a lot of people's houses that wouldn't have got it because the market didn't say that it needed.
Oh, exactly. Sometimes it doesn't make sense, and you all pay that small amount every month on your phone bill, even on VoIP, to help fund that.
And they still made money.
Yeah.
Yes.
You want to call somebody here?
Yeah. What? No, you're doing good.
Oh, okay. Here we go. Scott in the back there in yellow. Yeah, there we go.
I think that really hits on the core of the problem is that the both the cable providers and the telephony companies really they're using public rights of way to feed their cables, but they aren't held accountable to the commons to support that. For instance, I've got Comcast because it's about the only way I'm going to get decent bandwidth into my house at all. After trying for many years on the telephone company. Get them to fix the lines to actually deliver the bandwidth that they were promising and lying about. You know, so there is no competition. There is no market competition here at all. These people have a hardcore monopoly just about everywhere they are.
Except you said,
as long as we allow them to abuse that, it's going to be the stupid thing.
You said they're not beholden to anybody, though. I mean, in Oregon, we have the Public Utility Commission that they're beholden to, and also the FCC at a federal level they're accepting
to. But they've been considerably weakened, all the regulatory agencies.
Well, this is just government sucks conversation, but yeah.
So we don't get any real regulation.
Yeah.
The telephone company let me choose my provider. They can give me a naked DSL line coming in, and I can say, oh, well, I would rather use Speakeasy than Bell South, because Bell South is all, you know, Windows-centric.
That stuff I don't think isn't set up for the cable system, though.
Yeah, I don't think yet.
Doesn't have to let me choose another provider.
Yeah.
There is no competition here. That's the core of the problem.
And do we want to move more into the other aspects of this, keep taking questions?
Well, I think
it runs through their head in. They can't really pipe some other company's feed over their head in out to there.
Right. It would be tougher to do that.
The way right of way works, back to government sucks. They're not going to let two companies have right of way over the same passage at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So this close end here behind you.
Well, I think that a part of the using government controls is just that due to the way that lobbying works, it really doesn't work when you're beholden to something that you own. It just doesn't work.
Actually rant, but okay.
But I also, do you think that perhaps as more people see the cap, I mean, how many people are actually hitting that cap?
Well, they claim that it would not affect 99% of their user base, and from what I've seen, you know, for Usenet, you know, which is another place where people use a whole lot, that, you know, as a model went from, it originated as everybody can just download whatever you want, and then MP3s came along, and, you know, the first movies were starting to show up, and it's like, we better put a cap on here, because while there are just a few people who really, you know, will just sit there and download as much as they can, and they somehow have fat pipes to do this over. That it really is. There is some sense to that argument, right? You know, at the beginning, But as more things come through, and like I was saying about the Olympics here, that we're coming into more and more times, you know, more and more availability of bandwidth using media, that it appeals to the mainstream. So it's not, you know, some kid sitting down there who wants to download movies illegally or something like that. It isn't that sort of content. It's become more mainstream. YouTube is there and has a lot of information on it that, you know, your grandfather might want to see, or, you know, your grandmother might want to go and, you know, watch a recipe, or may just want to watch your latest show, you know, on, you know, which NBC also provides, and a lot of other places are going to offering it over this line. And it sort of cuts the cable providers out. They'd rather that you did it through them. And thus the tension, I think, among the cable providers in particular.
So that's an interesting thing, though, is that one of the things that we're looking at here is the fact that we have become, at least the people in this room probably, are part of the broadband society. We really need to have access to a lot more than dial-up will provide us. But, you know, that we only represent probably, you know, 10% at most of the population right now. You know, there's a lot of people that are still suffering along with dial-up, and what we're talking about are the various ways that broadband can come into your place. If you don't like the way the cable system does it for $50 a month, or and you don't have access to Fios for $50 a month, you could always do a $300 a month solution if you can get that from the local phone company.
Yeah.
And maybe not then. I mean, you know, there's no right to access broadband. And that's, maybe that's, you know, when universal phone service was put in place, was it the 40s when that was put in place? They said everybody has to have phone delivered everywhere. That was a monumental decision, and maybe we're at the point now where we're looking at having that same sort of thing with broadband.
Yeah, when I've traveled abroad in India, there are areas in the deserts of Gujarat where they're putting in power lines and they're putting in fiber at the same time. It's like these people who literally live in mud huts in many cases are going to have faster bandwidth than I do, and probably not going to have anything to do it
for
use
cheaper
it on,
for cheaper
because
too.
The government is pushing it. The government is saying, "Hey, you're already putting in these lines. How about you do something for us here so that, you know, our people can have this access." And we had a question way in the back in the blue. Do you still have a...
It's actually going back to the last mile issue you were talking about, Comcast creating RCAPs to favor their services. This question is more generic. From your perspective on it, is that actual tactic, as they're doing it right now, is it legal for them to do that, as with the classifications of the services that they currently are? Or what's your opinions on how that...
I don't know if I've read everything there is on this, but I think, you know, the fact is that Comcast has been given the right to run a cable out and pretty much do whatever they want, whatever they agreed with you to do, unless the FCC locks them in somehow, and we've only seen a couple of examples of that. So yeah, we're making history now. We're setting precedents here. And, you know, if we don't watch out for this, I mean, it's obviously the intention in this room is to talk about this and try to get people interested in what needs to happen for this. And it's definitely a hot topic.
So
keep picking. You're doing good.
Green here.
Yep. Just a comment on the whole legislation to demand that everyone gets a certain level of service. It doesn't actually change the capital or operating costs. All it does is ends up deferring it to everyone else.
Yeah.
So saying that a house that's somewhat distant should get particular service is nothing more than saying that all of us should chip in $5 to make sure they get it. It doesn't actually change any of the costs. Those costs just get distributed to the rest of us. Mm-hmm.
There is some scaling costs, though, some scaling things to help there.
That, in some cases, the encouragement really, you know, can help. I mean, the fact that they just wouldn't do it, it's like, well, it just doesn't make any sense for us to run cable out to your neighborhood. It's like, 100 yards down the road, they've got it. You know, please, come on, you know, just bring it out here. Why not?
You know? In that scenario, it's not like you're not getting any benefit by chipping in that $5. Analogous to running sewer out in the middle of nowhere.
Roads.
Yeah, you get something, roads. You get something back from it, you know, by having sanitary situations delivered. You get the benefit of less disease spread that can come into your neighborhood. Same thing with telephone service, same thing with electrical service. There are benefits that you get by contributing to the common good.
Not saying you should do it, just being saved there is a larger cost.
Yeah. And the other side of this is that in order to provide access to more people there in a community, say you've got a community and you've got maybe 50% saturation for cable, then as if they were mandated to provide 100% saturation to that whole county or whatever, then they would have to beef up their bandwidth coming into that county, assuming that, you know, everything else is fair there. So that would help you as well, you know, that you would be able to benefit from that, and assuming that everybody isn't doing that. And it also may drive new technologies. They may have to sit there and say, look, you know, the government wants us to do this, and we're going to get this pittance to do it with. maybe we need to come up with a better way. Maybe somebody will, or maybe things will change.
And just to kind of make another step around the circle of the what I think this whole conversation is about today, I want to talk for a moment about traffic shaping versus blocking. So when Comcast originally came to aware, because they were essentially blocking BitTorrent traffic after it reached a certain level, because we were sending faked RST packets to everybody, and that's how they got caught about this. So, you know, is blocking torrent entirely versus shaping it more evil? Is that really what the issue is? And then as a side issue to that, what's the notion of BitTorrent itself being inherently evil, inherently bad to the network? I mean, have we mixed up the idea that, you know, BitTorrent is evil for everything and therefore it's okay to shape it, with the fact that there's a lot of good things that are shipped around with BitTorrent as well? I mean, at what point are we making moral decisions about the kind of traffic it is, rather than just simply looking at it from the network demand?
Yeah, a lot of my take on that is that you can easily vilify the some level of high usage content, you know, and say this needs to be cut. But in effect, it seems more like it's an easy one to cut out. It's something that they can attack and say, you know, well, nobody's going to step up to the defense of BitTorrent because it's all piracy and all that. But that may or may not, you know, that's changing. A lot of these technologies
start out. It's all kiddie porn. Yeah,
exactly.
Just kidding.
Yeah, well, the New York Attorney General would have it down.
Exactly.
No time at all if that were the case. And so you end up with situations where, you know, that was an easy target for them. That was one angle, instead of having to say to everybody and fess up, 250 gigabyte cap, or otherwise, you know, muddy their marketing a little bit, where they're telling you 7 megabits and you're, you know, writing in, you know, 1 point type up to, you know, above it. Now they, and then just going after the really high users across the board, because by going after BitTorrent, it isn't even the 250 gig cap, it's everybody who is using it above a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
So they could, and that was wider reaching, but they felt that that was a target that they could go after, as you said, because they may have felt that it was inherently evil. They felt that they would have the backing of the media companies.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take some comments on that.
They got push buttons everywhere now.
And the white shirt over here beside the wall.
This is going back a little bit. With everything that Comcast, and I believe it's a few other companies they mentioned as well, will also be doing that, but I don't remember any off the top of my head. I mean, obviously they're doing this stuff because, like you said, they lay down pipes, neighborhoods were built, and all of a sudden they're going, hey, people are downloading a lot more capacity than we sold. Is Comcast being stereotypical evil corporation and just sitting back and saying, you know, we'll bump people back and the people who need to go above that cap will be paying more and we'll be making more money? Or are they actually taking that money and putting into a better infrastructure?
Well, that was one of the issues that I'd raise there, is that the infrastructure, you know, they could have... I think that if it were available, that they could charge a second tier easily, you know, and set it after the 250,
yes.
Then they probably would, because that's an easy way.
It's
well, there's constantly, you know, research is always being done at, you know, Cisco and all that. I would be happy to sell them new equipment and all that. It's just a matter of whether or not they're funding it back in. Honestly, I don't know.
It does say, as a quote from the company, we are not currently offering a consumption-based model where you could purchase more gigabytes per month, but it is a model we are evaluating.
Next thing you know, be a special client that gets you extra bandwidth for BitTorrent alone. They shape it
down. Maybe, yeah. Or downloading movies that compete with their service.
And the red shirt over here?
Well, with BitTorrent, with the because Comcast and other providers start shaping it, you get into the issue with the escalating arms race on it. Where BitTorrent typically is used now fully encrypted. Mm-hmm. So you can't even, if they wanted to, give it like a lower priority.
Exactly.
That
becomes a problem, you know, if they...
A bunch of corporate people mad as hell if they can.
Yeah, exactly. If they start to broaden the fight there, then that's...
Cut it all for...
Yeah, one of the issues that this gets is like the small office, home office that wants to do offsite backups, so they're using these services that automatically upload a lot of data, you know.
Amazon,
right.
Yeah.
Like S3 storage and stuff like that. Yeah, this is going to come into those as well, so it might be an issue. You might not get 250 gigabytes a month just downloading movies, but you might get it just because you're running a small office, home office stuff, and
exactly.
Into that.
You know, put in some teleconferencing.
And, yeah.
Yeah, so.
A lot more hands here.
Yeah. Again, in the way back in the blue.
The comment of the RST packets is that, well, was this evil to block or to shape? If I were to label something as evil, I or in that category of stuff, I would say more is that they didn't say anything about it. Somebody had to figure straight out to themselves that this is what they're doing and what's going on. Because even in the end, if they're making a bad decision, we didn't have a chance to have a dialogue like this about it.
Yeah,
that's a very good point.
We can sit around and talk and maybe give them informed opinions, whereas before suddenly, nope, we're blocking it. We hoped you wouldn't notice.
On the other hand, it does say in the AUP that they'll take steps to manage the networking if they find that you're disrupting it. That's part of the AUP. So they could just argue that under that umbrella, they're allowed to do things like this. And although, yes, you know, as a technology guy, I am forging packets as a way of throttling is really like the creepiest way to do it. But it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay, with the yellow again, and then.
First of all, back to the funding issue, I'd like to point out that a lot of states, it's my understanding the Public Service Commission's grant of the telecoms, massive tax breaks, already took the money from our pockets to install fiber to the homes. And none of that money ever ended up getting back, put back in infrastructure the way it was promised. Okay, so they've already been funded, but Reed won out. Okay. The other point is that on the issue of throttling, I think it's a much more slippery slope when you allow these companies to selectively choose which services, which types of packets and things they're gonna allow through. Because you don't know, like you said, from one day to the next, whether it's SSH or SSL they're gonna allow through, or whether it's BitTorrent, and allowing them to vilify the legitimate uses of BitTorrent and create these fraudulent campaigns. Vilifying certain services, I think that's a place we really need to strongly put the brakes on and
And I think this is why net neutrality is such an important topic, because if we have last mile providers that can get away with murder, watch, I just elevated it to murder already.
Speaking of evil,
we're gonna be going Godwin's law any moment now. So
it's just like in 1940.
remember the torrent they were using?
Yeah.
Right now? Okay. Right. I agree. What I just saw about this, though, is it's all of our worst nightmares coming together at the same time. I'm angry about government for not doing the right things. I'm angry with the faceless phone company about things. It's like all of the things that we consider sort of these faceless and dysfunctional things are coming together in this one issue.
Yeah. If you don't mind, I'd move it a little bit along here. You started to touch on this, is it how this week, you know, it's BitTorrent and then other things. Is it, you know, from the content provider's point of view, more from an ISP's point of view, you know, we're in a situation where now we're worried, you know, a content provider can be worried, well, you know, they're not only might compete with us if we're providing content, you know, as Randall's already touched on, but they might decide that they want to pin special deals. Like, well, now suddenly, you know, YouTube, you know, doesn't have a special deal with us because Google is, you know, too full of themselves, too snooty, or just too money-minded. But this other little guy who you've never heard of before is happy to provide you something with a poorer technology that, you know, just really doesn't work out for you. But they've pinned a deal with us. They've got faster, you know, access through there. And that's another. That was sort of an earlier discussion with the network neutrality. Was a lot of it was, the concern that, well, they claim that they've built these paths here for the content to go to the end user. They should be able to charge tariffs potentially on in either direction. So there's the other side of this as well. You know, are you going to end up being focused on sites that have cut a deal with your cable company, or are you going to be able to make a choice as a consumer, which, as we also mentioned already, you may not have a choice as to your cable company or your choice of, you know, broadband.
I mean, suppose
we've got a lot of legal precedent on this, though, that comes out of the railroad monopolies, and it's the idea of common carrier. And as when railroads were cutting these special deals to enforce their monopoly, allowing, you know, their friends and their companies to ship cheaper and take up the bandwidth on the trains, so there's a lot of legal precedent by which we can establish, you know, this common carrier, common carrier thinking to the ISPs,
I think, too. Right, so the cable companies can't both, you know, wearing one hat, say, well, you can't hold us accountable for the traffic we're shipping inside this tube because we're a common carrier, and then wear another hat and say, but we also get to block all BitTorrent because we think it's evil.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to do that, yeah.
Yeah, and the gray shirt here.
Well, I really think that the biggest advantage of, and the real... The biggest advantage of requiring, you know, a universal broadband is the economy. Because I think the argument for doing that is saying we we have a public education system because that is so crucial for you to become successful financially, that is tied to your career, that is tied to your success in life. We require home everywhere because that is so tied to your success in your career.
Your safety, yeah.
And then isn't broadband now becoming that as well, as so much of the things that we do financially is online?
I think you could argue that maybe a couple of years from now, maybe 5 years from now, but I don't think we're quite there yet. You know, we're in a society here, we're in a subculture that really is broadband dependent now, but if I ask five of my non-geek friends if they have broadband at home, you know, maybe one of them will have broadband. It's not, even in places that it's easy to get to it. We have cable, we have Fios, we have everything in Portland. So yeah. That they don't have broadband yet tells me that it's not as pervasive in this society as a whole, and we're a little narrow-minded perhaps because all of our friends do.
Yeah, exactly. There are still people out there with no email, and
yeah.
It's shocking.
A lot more pervasive, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Okay. They're on the edge here, right straight down on the aisle.
The gentleman that speculates about it being so important to the educational system, I agree that it's going to be a while before that comes about, because right now there's precious little interest within the educational community as a structure to even see to it that the kids that are supposed to be educating are educated, or even in class after they've signed in the morning.
Yeah. As I understand it, there are some states that are taking initiatives for online classes for public education, not just for things like community college in my area offers online classes, and everybody knows that University of Phoenix, but I've run into people online who take classes for high school in Florida, I believe it is, online, and it's like, wow, that's so cool, I wish I could have done that, that's an interest of mine, so that's something I certainly hope to be the case. I think that, you know, that maybe address other issues that, yeah, I don't know, maybe that will be a panel in a couple of years. So, in the red?
Just as a side note on this, we talk about having the common carrier for different services to keep over it, but everything except for a spare copper phone line is no longer categorized as a common carrier service.
Right.
FCC, even DSL was removed of that recently. So Fios, cable, and DSL, they really aren't common carrier products now. That it would even force pay instead of that power.
Yeah, it'd be nice. I mean, we had discussed that a little bit earlier, touched on that about the cable companies not offering, you know, the fellow had mentioned that he had, you know, the copper came in via Bell South, but he used Speakeasy. And we had touched on the fact that, you know, with your cable company, you couldn't do that, that the pipes, I believe somebody said something about it running back to their particular head for, and because they offer their content, you know, their video content, you know, television, you know, who uses it for that these days? You know, you got the internet, right? So, but because of that may complicate things. I don't understand it. I haven't kept up with that aspect of it myself. So,
cable's always been exempted, as was fiber from the common carrier requirements. Yeah. But there was a decision recently that was argued from the FCC that, because it was so competitive now, that DSL should be exempted as well. I thought the decision was to remove that.
Yeah, I thought, I don't know, I'd heard at one point that naked DSL, you know, the bare wire DSL without phone service was, had been in peril at one point, but it seems to have made a resurgence. You know, Bell South offers it, and I know, and then you can buy from other companies. I don't think that, you know, you would lose the competition if you had to go by whoever put down that last line, the last mile of copper.
I just tried to get a dry loop and I couldn't.
Really? In Georgia?
No, in Florida, South.
Okay, yeah, I don't know.
It just depends on your market.
And
the black back here.
Yeah, exactly. There we go.
I just want to make a quick correction about common carrier status. That's a bit of a misnomer that I think a lot of people have. Common carrier speaks only towards liability. So if, for example, you call up the White House and say, I want to assassinate the president, AT&T can't be held responsible for your actions. That's what common carrier speaks towards. It has nothing to do with equal access whatsoever.
I thought it did from the railroad.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't apply in the same way.
Common carrier is about liability.
It's been distorted for that. It was called common carrier when the law
But as you were saying, that's because everybody wants to have their cake and eat it too. They want to say, well, we're a common carrier, we can't become liable for that sort of stuff. But at the same time, we'd really like to filter your content because it makes our profit margin better.
Okay, here we go. The Vulcan.
I was just going to point out that because the LEDX getting fiber optic, because installation is so much cheaper to upgrade. Most of America right now is running on infrastructures of infrastructures built, what, 10, 20 years ago?
Right.
It just wasn't designed at the speed that we're running out.
Right. And the tax breaks they were given would improve it. We're not used to improving it.
Okay. Here, just one second. Let me, in the purple and red.
I was just going to go back real quick to the status of 5-3 years before it becomes important for everyone's careers and whatever. Maybe that's because all of the upper middle class individuals who are about 18, 22, all of my non-geek friends still have broadband. Because they still use YouTube, they still use BitTorrent, they still use all these.
like a drug.
And it's going to be where they can't function without those things wherever they go. And even people that are a little bit older than that are getting jobs now, those jobs require high-speed internet access for telecommuting, even for non-technical jobs, where you're just doing engineering. For example, we're just looking at spreadsheets and paper report and manuals or whatever, and you have to send that off to the office.
Well, I think what you're going to end up seeing then is that the people who for whom broadband has become essential, it's the same thing for people for whom public transit is essential. You can't get public transit out in the rural areas of Portland. So there are certain corridors that are guaranteed accessible by public transit, and there are a lot of areas that aren't. And the same thing is going to be true with broadband. You're going to actually pick where you live because you need broadband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I chose poorly.
Choose wisely.
Yeah.
Yes.
So here on the aisle.
So my question concerning common carrier status, if these companies are no longer protected by liability by that, what's to say that someone couldn't sue the cable company for allowing a customer to peddle into illegal wares?
Well, I think then you've got the DMCA, and I mean, you start to get into copyright issues there, or you come into things under the child protection.
Harmless clause on your contract.
Well, yeah, there's a contract, but then again, you can always sue.
neither of us are a lawyer, by the way.
Yeah, not a lawyer.
We're not a lawyer, not even close.
Yeah. For copyright issues, if you're uploading illegal wares or whatever, the DMCA covers that. They would, your provider would receive a takedown notice. So long as they did the right things, then they can have safe harbor from that liability, so long as they do the right thing, and so long as they aren't, you aren't their best buddy, and you're setting, they set you up in order to be able to do this, it's probably going to be okay to them, and they probably get 1,000, of these a day easily if they're a large company anyway. So that's that's a totally different thing. The common carrier aspect of this, over the years, I saw people bring it up, in the sense that the fellow in the back there had said that it's only about liability. That was brought up, but it really wasn't, that doesn't apply so much. It's they've come up with new laws, good or not, that shape this. So, I think over here in the yellow again.
I just want to say, leading up to kind of wrap this up since we're short on time now.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas on solutions? It sounds like it's more a political engineering problem than a technical engineering.
That seems to be part of it, is that we have to have an oversight of these last mile carriers, and we have to have a consistent policy with that. And there's a lot of work being done by groups like the EFF and stuff to try to get the voice out there. But what we can do as individuals is make sure that the EFF's voice is heard or know what the issues are. And like this meeting today was part of that, trying to make sure that the education is out there about what the issues are.
All right, in the blue shirt here behind the green.
Kind of discussing all these things and talking about a lot of things you guys have been talking about. By the last mile and all these big news coming out and stuff like that. Is there a common source, that might be a place to send people who might want to be educated about these things?
I got everything I got from Wikipedia, so. I've just been looking up Wikipedia articles while you guys are talking. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had to reload a couple times.
And did it change?
It didn't change while I was doing the gear.
Okay, and just in the Dragon Con t-shirt.
Well, one thing that concerns me whenever you're talking about federal laws and regulations, two things, actually. First of all, virtually every senator is bought and paid for by various interests, so that's going to come into it. But even more scary, I think we all heard Ted Stevens, the internet is not a dump truck, the internet is a series of tubes. This is a guy who's in charge of the committee that's going to be making those rules.
No, he hasn't been since 2007.
Do we want, you know, how do we deal with that fact? How do we deal with the conflict of interest with the lobbying? And even more importantly, we have a 50% chance of having our next president who's never used the internet. How do we deal with that?
Yeah.
If you're going to start talking about how dysfunctional government is, we're not going to have enough time.
Yeah. I'll just say what I said yesterday is that, you know, be active, be a voice, or back those people who are online who are getting access. Yeah. Well, that too, you know, be active locally and, you know, write some letters, let them know, because while they're lobbyists and all
don't
that,
send them email, they're obviously not getting it.
Yeah. The dump truck crashed on the way in. So, but, you know, let them know, you know, let your, Congress people and senators know what, you know, what you believe and how you feel on this, and make sure and back those people online. There are people who, you know, feel maybe you feel a little passionate about it, and there are people who feel very passionate about it and actually go and speak to Congress directly. You know, when they call in people who go and talk, you know, to the Copyright Office for all of this, you know, bundle of issues that we feel more like we're the you know, they look at us perhaps as consumer sheep, you know, as that we're just here to consume these products, and of course the one providing it knows better for us, so they should be the ones. And not to mention, you know, a little bit of cash under the table doesn't hurt. But when people don't say anything as well, nobody says anything otherwise, if everybody just assumes that the lobbying dollars matters more than their voice, then that will be true. You will have made your, you will have chosen poorly.
There is no force, lobbying dollars or not, there's no force more powerful than the vote.
Yeah, so let them know, you know, and, you know, let them know, especially in the election times. In the green here.
I was just going to say, in summary, what do you say the top three challenges to net neutrality over the next few years?
I think that, like, the conflict that Comcast has set up for us now, which is that because they're a last mile provider and also potentially a content provider, that they can mix up the potential issues there. Deciding that BitTorrent is evil across the board when in fact it isn't, so either blocking it or shaping it based just on its technology. Third one.
The bleed over from that, I think, also that, you know, first they came for BitTorrent, and then what's next? You know, Usenet, and then, you know, shady sites, and then it's your site because you're a blogger and maybe you aren't popular, and then, or people who don't have money or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, what if they block all SMTP traffic and then say you have to read everything by webmail? I mean, that would be crazy for a lot of us. Yeah.
Yeah, port 25 is evil. BitTorrent's been really using that a lot.
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, I'll probably got to wrap it up. Maybe one last question?
Over here in the back.
Just in terms of who to play to, one great source, often overlooked, local public service commission, things pretty miserable for Comcast.
Yeah.
For material reach with any franchise agreements, much lower hanging fruit, potentially more powerful.
And I will say to that, though, that actually the people that I've talked with that are in charge often are very ignorant on these issues. So if you can bring them an understanding of the technology, and so they really understand what they're making choices about, better choices might be made.
Yeah, don't yell at them. Educate.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
If you need to, then educate and get your friends to come in there, too, because often they're just sitting there tacking off, okay, we heard a complaint about Comcast and poor network, you know, poor bandwidth, whatever. So, get your friends involved.
On federal level, too, I think the FCC has to be fairly responsive and has lots of opportunities for public input on their decisions. It's one of the reasons that the Comcast decision came down the way it did. Despite trying to, stacking the corporate friends, it's still a fairly functional arm of the government as far as regulating these corporations.
Good point.
Let them hear you and go along with it.
Well, thank you all for coming.
Yeah,
it's been a great panel.
Thanks.